"How do you feel, Georgie?" whispered Mrs. Weasley. George's fingers groped for the side of his head.
"Saint-like," he murmured.
"What's wrong with him?" croaked Fred, looking terrified. "Is his mind affected?"
"Saint-like," repeated George, opening his eyes and looking up at his brother. "You see, I'm holy, Fred. Get it?"
Welcome to the Basic Cinephile Podcast, Season 1, Harry Potter. Ziana.
And I'm your other host, Adelia. This season on the Basic Cinephile Podcast, we are reading all of the Harry Potter books and watching all the Harry Potter movies. And this week we are kicking off episode 17, wow, with the seventh movie, The Deathly Hallows Part 1.
This podcast contains spoilers. This movie has been out for almost 12 years, so we don't feel bad spoiling anything and everything about it. But if you want to watch it first, pause the episode and go read all the books and binge all the movies, because I don't know how many books and movies we will end up referencing in this episode.
Probably a lot. So, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 was directed by David Yates, who is the same director of the previous movie. Or when did he start?
He did The Half-Blood Prince, and I think he also did The Order of the Phoenix.
Okay, cool. I was like, he did a lot of them, so he's kind of main director. And it was written by Steve Kloves, and the music was composed by Alexander Desplat.
Oh, I don't know how to pronounce that.
It's French, it looks like. This is his first movie being the composer, so.
Well, job well done, yeah. Alexander Desplat.
So the runtime is 2 hours and 26 minutes and was originally supposed to be one movie. But Steve Kloves was like, hey, we cannot fit this all into one movie. I guess the script was like 500 pages, so.
Fair enough. There's a lot to unpack in one movie.
Yeah, I can see why it needed to be two. Also, from a studio perspective, cha-ching, so much money.
Oh, for sure. And it spawned that two-part series for the finale being common. So now we got a Twilight part one
and
two.
Yeah, that was wild.
We got part one and two of Hunger Games. And I do feel like it's kind of justified for this movie. Those other aforementioned franchises, not so much.
Twilight's a rough one. I mean, I love it, but that was one that definitely did not need to be a two-part finale.
A two-parter, no. Even this movie did feel a little like drawn out, but also it doesn't feel like you could have fit the other half of it, the information in. So
I think it just didn't need to be 2 hours and 26 minutes. Like, agreed. If they could have just made it 2 hours,
yes,
and then the next one 2 hours, you're still shaving an hour off of the runtime, basically. But
yes, and that would be like a 4 hour movie, which does actually seem like a reasonable runtime for how much information is in the Deathly Hallows book.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Be prepared for us to say that, because it's really fun. So the Rotten Tomatoes score is a 77%, but the audience score is 85%. How do you feel about those ratings?
Well, I feel like I'm agreeing more with the tomato meter. Yeah. And honestly, it could be a little lower. This one was a little rough to get through.
Yeah, so the rewatch didn't change your mind?
No, I feel like I'm kind of a broken record at this point. Pretty much every movie, I'm like, oh, wow, it really, really drags on.
They don't make them short, that's for sure.
They don't. And I'm really seeing, I already knew this, but I am team books over hard movies so much for this franchise. For my life, I'm probably team movies over team books, but
yeah, I mean, I get down with the movies. They're a great one to have, you know, running in the background on Thanksgiving and stuff like that.
Definitely.
But it's got a lot of room for improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as we've said, I think before, I'm excited for the day when they do like a limited series of this.
Yes.
Just go hard.
There's so much important information, and most of my favorite storylines are the ones that are kind of abbreviated or completely nixed for the sense of time.
And that's the good stuff.
I know.
Well, okay, so in this movie, we get a few new characters.
Yeah, we do.
We've got Rufus Scrimgeour, who is played by Bill Nighy.
Mm-hmm.
And I love him. He's not necessarily who I thought would be cast for that role.
No.
Based on the description, but darn it if I don't just love him and everything he's in.
Yeah, they talk about him in the book looking like a lion. And Bill Nighy and the way that they style him in this movie, he looks like that old lion. Like, if you go to a zoo, you're like, ooh, should we really be bringing this one out to, like, show off to the kids? I think this guy's earned a nap.
Yeah, he doesn't necessarily look super worn as far as, like, having, like, dueled people, like, scarred and, you know, chiseled by
no he looks battles. Like he's like freshly out of rehab.
Yeah, he does need a nap.
Yes,
but I mean, most politicians, I'll give it to you, you need naps.
He does have that strong, like, no BS attitude that's crucial for Scrimgeour, so I see that.
Yeah. So Ziana, who is your favorite new character or favorite new introduction to a character?
Xenophilius? Is that who you're talking about?
Well, I mean, Xenophilius, yeah, well, he's great. I was going to go with Bill Weasley.
Oh. Okay, yeah. So, Bill Weasley, I have a little story here, guys. So, in college, it was my first roommate, or my first time living with roommates, and two of my roommates were big Harry Potter fans. And we had been talking for months, like, we all booked tickets to go see this movie together. We were talking about how, you know, they cut out that epic battle scene in The Half-Blood Prince, where Bill Weasley gets attacked by a werewolf.
Fenrir Greyback,
not hot. And he ends up with that big, like, gash across his face and that really touching scene with Mrs. Weasley and Floor and blah, blah, blah. So in the movie, you know, they cut that out. They don't really do a battle at all. They burn down the burrow. It's a big mess. And so we were like, man, how are they going to introduce Billy, such an important character? You know, we had, like, all these theories of how are they going to seamlessly introduce him. And what do they do in this movie? Bill just walks up to Harry, sticks his hand out and says, I'm Bill Weasley. I was attacked by a werewolf. I'll get him back one day. It is the most on-the-nose, ridiculous thing. So the three of us in the movie theater, like, the night it came out, were busting up laughing just so loud. No one else in this theater is laughing.
It's not a funny moment.
It is. But it is when you think about, we're like, because we had so many, like, really well thought out ideas of how you could, like, subtly introduce the character, blah, blah, blah. No, we're just gonna walk up and go with, I'm Bill Weasley, I was attacked by a werewolf, and then let's just move the plot along.
This is Fleur, you already know her. She's hot enough for the both of us.
Yes, okay, and then every line they give him is equally on the nose. He's the one who later is just like, Mad-Eye Moody's dead. And I was like, okay, so we're not giving this guy anything to work with.
No, they really did him dirty.
They really did.
Yeah, it's a rough one. But, I mean, you did talk about someone that you brought up previously. We've got it's not Fenrir Greyback. We got Scavier.
Oh, who's Scavier.
Who's coming to play. Is he hot?
Guys, I don't know. I might be into Scavier, and I wish I wasn't. But here we are. He's got some eyeliner going on. He's got an old-timey haircut, but it's like a little mussed up, like a little modern. I don't know.
You know, you gotta stand by it. You said it.
Judge me all you want. He seems like in high school he was probably like a cape guy.
Oh, Scavier for sure was a cape guy.
Big cape energy.
But not as big of cape energy as Severus Snape.
Oh, Xenophilius, I was going to say. Big time cape energy.
Yeah, okay, he's just like a cape guy. But, like, Snape really works that cape.
Oh, Snape works a lot of things.
Yeah.
That whole wardrobe.
Does he have more than one thing in his wardrobe? I think he found his look and he locked in hard.
It is my goth nightmare.
Oh, Severus.
Oh, Severus.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so speaking of Bill's introduction, so in that is the scene where there are seven Harry Potters.
Yes.
And as we were watching, like, that's honestly my favorite scene from the entire movie.
Yeah, and it's the intro, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, because Daniel Radcliffe really gets to be...
Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, and...
And not He's Harry great. Potter for the first time. Because now we know Daniel Radcliffe is real kooky.
Yeah, he so kooky.
He loves to cross-dress. He loves to play eccentric characters. And especially the way that Harry Potter is written in the movies. I mean, that is the polar opposite. He's really not eccentric or kooky at all. And so, yeah, in the intro, he gets to basically play all of these different characters playing Harry Potter. So he gets to be Fleur being Harry Potter and the twins being Harry Potter. And he's fantastic.
Oh, absolutely genius. It's wonderful. So I guess it was like a, I mean, obviously when you think about it, it's a very technical scene.
Okay.
So, you know, Daniel is acting with himself in all these different places and you have to, you know, like overlap all that.
Okay.
So I guess at one point there was one shot that it took 90 takes. That's what Daniel counted.
Wow.
90 takes to get that specific shot for that scene. And okay. So it took 2 days for them to film that, which is crazy.
Wow. Okay.
But I guess he had a lot of fun doing it. So who do you think he had the most fun playing?
Fleur.
You are wrong.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, can I give a special shout out, though? Because what he does as Fleur, he's like taking off a bra, and he's like, don't look at me, I'm hideous. And it's fantastic.
Well, he said he thought he looked fantastic when he was playing Fleur. So, he did. I mean, he was feeling himself.
Okay, I have a new answer.
Okay.
He, Mundungus.
No.
Really?
His favorite was playing Ron, because he said that Rupert has a strut. So, he just got to be Rupert, just strutting around, playing
my gosh.
Ron as him, you know?
Just basically roasting his friend on the way that he walks, which, speaking of people in this movie playing other people in the way that they walk, there is a scene that we need to address. So there's that part where they're sneaking into the Ministry of Magic because they're trying to find the Horcrux that they know that Dolores Umbridge has.
Yeah.
So they sneak in, they polyjuice potion like three random people, and the actor that they got to play Daniel Radcliffe does the strangest walk I've ever seen. He fully commits to it. Every scene, he's walking like this really weird kind of exaggerated slow motion, like almost like I pooped in my pants, but I don't want it to fall out.
Almost as if he's never walked before. Like,
yeah.
It, to me, it just really feels like Harry is like wearing a skin suit of somebody else. Not that he like became someone else, but that he like unzipped him, jumped in, that's my outfit for right now. Yeah. And it's uncomfortable to walk in this.
Yeah, he's never walked before.
No.
Isn't there like, I've only taken a couple acting classes, so I apologize to everyone out there who's a serious actor, but I think there is a trick where you're supposed to, like, for every character, you're supposed to have a secret, and that's supposed to, like, make it more interesting when you're having these interactions with people, blah, blah, blah. I really think this guy made the choice that his secret was that he had pooped his pants and it was still in his underwear. And he was trying to like keep it in the underwear.
Keep it hidden. Yeah.
Because if that's not his secret, there's literally no other reason for him to have walked that way.
I don't know. That was a wild.
So that was my second favorite moment of the movie.
I did love it. Oh, it was comedically
fantastic. It entertained me
fantastic.
Way more than most of the other things that happened on screen.
Yeah. No, I have a lot of issues with this movie. I think that we talked in the previous episode about like how Creature redeems himself.
Mm-hmm.
At least I think he does. And in this one, they don't give him anything.
They don't give him his redemption scene, and they cut Dudley's redemption scene too.
Yeah, so you just have a lot of people that still suck in the movie.
The Dursleys, like, you just see them pack up their car, and then we just never see them again.
Yeah, Petunia doesn't even say goodbye.
They're just, like, out of there. And I'm like, well, why'd you even show them packing up the car? If that's how little attention we're going to pay these people who've been in 6 movies so far.
Yeah.
I was like, I mean, give them 20 seconds.
No, we're not going to give them that, but we are going to do a lot of other stuff. I have issues. I have issues that Hermione and Ron are the one who figure out RAB because it's just like on the door and they're like, oh, it's Regulus. And then they go to Creature and have Creature go and get the locket or get Mundungus who says,
yeah,
I don't have the locket anymore.
And they're mean to Creature
and
the whole time.
And they're still mean to him. And
so that in the book, you know, they're nicer to Creature and then Creature redeems himself because, you know, there's this like bond of mutual respect that they create, and then he's able to help them out more, and he's friendly, and he's
and he comes back at the end.
It totally like, changes the dynamic, and
he's
yet
there
again
at the battle.
Yet again, they just cut that out.
Yeah, he's there, and he's like, "This is my master." Like he has this moment of
yeah,
like
he's
Harry
like fighting loyally for Harry.
Yeah,
and
so,
they totally cut that out of the movies.
Yeah, I don't love that. I mean, justice for house elves in the books,
yes.
In the movies. I need some more representation there. That was a little disappointing. So
yeah,
overall, this movie really just did not do it for me.
No, there's a lot of room for improvement. But let's take this moment to hear from our sponsors for this episode, and then let's dive back in.
Heck yeah.
At The Basic Cinephile, we are all about accessibility, so we're super excited to introduce you to a new audio app called Newsly for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment, and it reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web has become listenable. So stop scrolling and start listening. You can follow any topic as specific as you like. They've got sports, science, finance, even the Kardashians. And you can find the latest articles and they'll read them to you. They have podcasts as well, including the Basic Cinephile podcast, Season 1 Harry Potter. So download and use Newsly for free now at www.newsly.me or from the link in our episode description. And use promo code BASICCINEPHILE, but replace all of the I's with 1s. So it's BASICCINEPHILE, and I'll put that in the description. And if you use our code, you can receive 1 month free premium subscription to Newsly.
All right, welcome back to the Basic Cinephile podcast. We are about to do some trivia / quizzing.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I didn't find a lot of this movie interesting, so I did find this interesting.
Ooh, shots fired.
Ouch.
And I concur.
Okay, so as a whole, how many wands do you think that the prop department made?
For this movie?
For, I think it's the entire franchise, but.
How? For the entire franchise? God, I'm so bad at quantifying things. 1,000.
No, but they said they made about 500.
Okay.
Individual wands, like, none are the same, so.
Wow, okay.
Well, maybe some were repeats, but they made 500, and everybody had different wands, so even those, like, extras and stuff.
Yeah.
They're not out here just using, like, the regular wands.
Oh,
like everyone
okay.
had different wands.
Props to the props department.
Yeah, that's an attention to detail that I appreciate.
Props to every props department.
Yeah.
Oh. Because it's so like easy to look over the props department, but when they do a bad job, it really stands out.
Oh,
you know?
You can tell. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when they do an excellent job, you're just like, you don't even notice them because you're transported into the world.
Yeah. So Daniel Radcliffe was kind of notorious for breaking wands.
Ooh.
So what's your guesstimate on how many wands that Daniel broke?
Again, we think this is the whole franchise or?
Yeah, this is throughout the whole franchise.
20.
It is rumored, though he says that it's exaggerated, that he broke 60. 60 wands.
Okay, Dan, what are you doing?
Well, that's my next question. What do you think he was doing?
To break the wand?
Yeah.
I think that he was putting them in his back pocket and then he was sitting down and the force of gravity would just like snap it in half.
I mean, I'm sure that happened at some point, but he was notorious for just, you know, drumming with his...
Shut up.
With his wand. And so, you know, over time, they would weaken and then he'd break it and have to go to the prop master and be like, so I need another wand.
So I still suck. Yeah. I'm still the worst.
Yeah, and he said that they would just give him a look like, stop drumming. Just stop drumming.
Well, first of all, for so many reasons, stop drumming. Even if the drumming led to zero broken wands, still annoying as heck. No one wants to hear you drum.
No, but also, you hired a bunch of children, so either you're going to get drumming and snapped wands, or, like, broken elbows and stuff, you know? You're going to get big injuries.
If I would have been cast in this movie as, like, an extra, I would have had no chance to not lose at least one wand. I would have been that guy that's like, sorry, I lost another one. Like, they're all intact. Wherever they are, they're fine. People keep, and you know, they get a lot of them returned. So I would have been the one like, oh, I'm so sorry. And they'd be like,
wand number 63.
They like pop it out and they're like looking for this. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, where'd you find it? And they'd be like, this one was next to the cheese and craft services. And I'd be like, ooh, yeah, it was.
I would have been notorious for, like, every time when I go into, like, a public restroom, you know, you set your phone on, like, the toilet paper holder. Yes. That would have been me. They would be like, hey, Edie.
Yes.
Hey, I lose every ring that I've ever owned because I, like, wash my hands and I set it next to the sink. So, yeah, that definitely would have been lost in at least 5 different bathrooms.
Phones and keys. When I used to work at a school, I got multiple emails of, like, we found your phone in a women's restroom and someone turned it in. We found your keys in the women's restroom. Someone turned them in. And every time I go get them, they're like, you know, you're so lucky that these don't get stolen. I'm like, oh, they never get stolen. I have good luck.
Yeah.
Bad memory. Fantastic luck. Yeah.
I guess it was a big problem. They had to, like, not literally, but, like, frisk people down to make sure they weren't stealing stuff.
Ooh, that would have been me too.
Everybody wanted, like, their items, you
know? I'm sure, especially, like, the last day that anyone was shooting, you would have to really frisk them.
Yeah, Emma reportedly took her time turner and her wand, and I think that Daniel took his wand and his first and last pair of glasses.
Ooh, okay.
Because he reportedly broke a lot of those, too.
Those are a good item to... What would you want to steal if you were...
Ooh.
A hypothetical random character.
I mean, it would probably be the wand, just because that seems like the wand is the easiest thing to get out of there.
Yeah. You could kind of like put it in your socks.
Mm-hmm. And there would be a lot of loss and, you know, broken ones. So it'd be like,
yeah,
I would like probably partially break it and then be like, oh, I need a new one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, take the broken one and be like, huh.
Or, like, the this. Wink, wink, I lost it.
Yeah. Yeah, big time. Big so time. I wouldn't go for anything super big, but I would want to take something. I mean, that's been your life for so many years.
You have to try and take, yeah, you got to try and take something.
Also, accidentally, I take stuff all the time. I'm at work and I'm like, my pockets are just loaded up with rubber bands. Like, I don't have any use for this. I don't need... You know, all these, like, bent paper clips. Like, yeah. I end up taking stuff home accidentally all the time.
I have a lot of branded pens.
Yeah.
And I'm not supposed to have most of those.
No, they were not given to me.
No.
So, next piece of trivia.
Yes.
So, the character who plays Bill Weasley, his dad, in real life, is also in the movies.
Really?
Yeah. Who do you think he is?
How many guesses do I get?
7. Just kidding.
Wow, that's too many. I was going to say, can I have 3?
3.
Okay. My first guess is that his dad is Bill Nighy?
No.
Dang it. Okay. My second guess is that his dad is actually Mr. Weasley?
No.
Okay. My third guess is that his... Father. Is it like a main character or is it a pretty deep cut?
It's a solid character.
It's a solid character.
I think that his father is Slughorn?
The lie detector test determined that is a lie.
Dang it.
So his dad, he actually talks about him.
Oh, no way. No way.
Yeah.
No way. Fenrir Greyback.
No.
Oh, dang it.
No.
That would have been cool.
Mad-Eye's dead. His dad is Mad-Eye Moody.
His dad is Mad-Eye Moody. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? That explains. I was trying to figure out, like, who does he kind of look like? And Mad-Eye Moody in the movie doesn't look like anyone.
Yeah.
Because he's just
disfigured after years of, you know, getting his nose cursed off.
He's got that stupid zoomy eye. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not natural.
No.
But yeah, that's his dad.
Okay.
So they didn't give him anything to work with, but he did get to announce that his father is dead. So
very interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So next piece of trivia.
Yes.
So Griphook gets a lot more screen time this time around than in the first movie. So in The Sorcerer's Stone, he is acted by a character, but he's voiced by another character.
Okay.
So the actor in the first movie, who do you think it is? It is someone who is notable, that is an American actor.
An American actor.
Yes. You are a big fan of of the movies and reality TV shows and...
Oh, no way.
Yes.
You guys, Vern Troyer?
Vern Troyer was who played Griphook in the very first movie in The Sorcerer's Stone.
Okay, so Vern Troyer is mini-me. Vern Troyer was on The Surreal Life.
Yeah.
He's been in a ton of other things, but I think, like, Mini-Me in the Austin Powers franchise is what probably is most well-known role.
Yeah, big time.
And Griphook. Okay, and he passed away, so R.I.P.
Yeah, he gave a great performance as Griphook in the first movie.
Yeah.
But he was not the voice for it.
No, I can see why. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the right voice.
No.
Okay, yeah. No, I really do. I love Vern Troyer, mostly because of The Surreal Life, which was a fantastic reality TV show back in the day that was basically like The Real World, but with like washed up celebrities. And it was on VH1.
It was awesome.
Those of you that remember it, oh, those were the good days. Mm-hmm. Those of you that have never seen it, you're missing out. It
probably didn't age well.
And I'm sure if I were to watch it again, I would hate it.
Yeah. But at the time, it was absolutely genius.
So he's probably the most famous American actor to be in the series because they really, for the most part, like, didn't hire anyone American.
Yeah.
I thought they only hired British people. So
I don't know. I feel like Vern Troyer is American.
Yes.
Yeah. It has to be.
American accent.
Yeah. Okay. So in this movie, it's actually played by... his name, gosh.
Because he'd probably passed away already.
Probably.
I don't remember what year he passed away, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so, no, this was 2010, and I went and did something in 2010 that brought me near Vern Troyer's house.
Oh, yeah.
And he lived there.
Okay.
We would drive past and be like, that's Vern Troyer's house. Yeah. So, but they did get another character to play him, and they had the same person who was the voice actor for Griphook.
Okay.
Play Griphook. And his name is, have this written down, Warwick Davis.
That's a fun name.
Yes, it is. And so he actually plays Flitwick as well.
Oh, okay.
And his most famous role, possibly, was his first role.
Okay, which is?
When he was 11, he got cast as an Ewok in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, okay.
And originally, the man who played R2-D2 was going to be the main Ewok. And the one who, like, introduces himself to Luke and, you know, brings him there. But he got sick, and so they bumped up Warwick Davis. And, yeah, he was 11 years old, and he got to play that character. Yeah.
Super cool thing. So he has made his mark on the cinematic world in some pretty famous franchises. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than Star Wars and Harry Potter.
Oh, incredibly, incredibly
big
franchises.
There are some franchises that can touch it, but you could make a strong case for those being the two most famous franchises of all time.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, so I guess he didn't even, like, really want to necessarily be an actor, but they heard his... mom or grandma heard on the radio that they were doing like a casting call for little people, and so he was like, I'm a big fan of Star Wars, so
11 year old boy,
he was just like super stoked to like go and meet like George Lucas and you know, like be around Chewbacca and stuff, and so he went and they cast him, and he was just going to be an extra, and then he ended up being like a really big deal. So, I mean, clearly that changed the trajectory of his life. And
Warwick Davis.
Yeah, no.
Job well done.
No, seriously. He's in like a ton of stuff and it's very impressive.
Oh, and he's so good as Flitwick.
And he's so good as Flitwick. And I love Grip Hook. Like, yes. Grip Hook is so incredible. Yes. So I'm excited for, you know, part two of getting to see a little bit more Grip Hook in action.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
all the good stuff happens in part two.
It really does. So maybe that's why I'm hating on this so much.
Break our stinking hearts with the Dobby death.
Oh my goodness.
And I mean, they did a really good job with that. I have to say, that scene to me, like, it was heartbreaking in all of the ways that it should be heartbreaking.
It was really
tough. I hate to watch it.
But I do have to critique it yet again. They have Harry holding Dobby, and he just says, like, very accusatory to Ron, Hermione, Luna, like, these people who just, like, love and support him unconditionally. And he's just like, I'm going to bury him with a shovel, or, like, I'm going to do it, you know, the right way.
No magic.
No magic. And I'm like, nobody was telling you couldn't do that. Like, it was so on the nose. They didn't need to do that. If you just showed him up there with a shovel digging a grave, then
yes,
that would have been enough.
We talked about this while we were watching the movie, but there is a lot of like the small nuanced parts of the books that in this movie, they just blurted out, hi, I'm Bill Weasley, Mad-Eye Moody's dead, I'm gonna bury Dobby. It's like, they didn't have to say all these things so obviously. Because in the book, it's like Harry is heartbroken, as is everyone else. Hermione was just tortured. Luna was just busted free from being held in captive for months. She didn't know that she was going to live. Ollivander doesn't know what's going on. Like, everyone is in this same traumatic environment. It's not just Harry who's sad that Dobby died.
No.
You know? And he, in that moment in the book, he basically is so overcome by emotion that he can't speak. So he just like asks for a shovel and wants to go bury him, and it's said specifically in the book, like, no one asked, one said anything. It was like this,
they noticed it. Yes. They're like, Harry is up there, and everyone like respected it.
Yes.
It was one of those things where it's like, I know that we can use magic for this, but sometimes you just need to go and work out your emotions.
Yes. It's this moment of unspoken understanding.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like everyone just sort of like hops into their own roles at that point. And people are, you know, dealing with like Fleur, these people show up at her house and she's immediately like tending to the wounded, and people are just, they're helping. Everyone's just kind of goes into this like, okay.
Action mode.
And Harry, you're so stinking sad. All you can do is like, you just want to show Dobby respect, and you just want the mindless task of like, digging a hole.
Yeah.
And no one questions it because everyone understands that, like, that's therapy in that moment. Mm-hmm. But in the movie they're like, I'm gonna bury him without magic. It's very accusatory, and everyone's just kind of like, okay. And it happens like 2 seconds after Dobby's died.
Yeah.
So it seems insensitive of like, let's dig a hole and throw his body in it. It's like, can we just process the fact that he literally just died?
Yeah, you could have shown the passage of time by like the light changing and then just showing Harry up there digging it. That would have been enough.
Yes.
And it would have been beautiful.
I get why they did it, but I mean, come on.
Yeah, it just didn't need to happen.
No.
And another thing that was missing from this movie was one character who has been in every other movie.
Okay.
I mean, it made sense that they weren't in it, but like...
Neville?
No, because Neville shows up and you were like, oh my gosh, he's already
show him on the train.
Yeah. Yep,
and he's standing up to the Death Eaters. Okay, you're absolutely right. McGonagall?
Yeah. There's no McGonagall in this movie.
That makes sense, because there's no Hogwarts in this movie.
Yeah, so
they show
it does
the train
track,
for one scene.
But, like, I still missed her.
Yeah, you know what? I miss Minerva. That's probably part of why this movie ranks low for me. We originally both had ranked this movie at number 6.
It might be, I think it's 7 for
me. I know that there's only 8 movies, but I'm like, this has to move down.
Or I guess maybe, I think this one's going to be my dead last.
It is. I had The Sorcerer's Stone ranked last, and now I'm like, no, the nostalgia factor is too high, and they do such a good job of sticking to the book.
Yeah.
So this movie will definitely be moving down the rankings for me.
Yeah, spoiler alert, it's dead last.
It doesn't have far to fall, but it needs to fall.
I mean, the only thing that could change that is if part 2 is just so much worse than I remember it. So that, TBD.
TBD.
You'll never know. You will. You'll know very shortly.
You literally for sure will know if you continue listening to our podcast.
It's kind of the whole point.
Please want to know.
Please
We're
know.
We're kind of counting on you wanting to know.
Yeah, I'm counting on me wanting to know too if I made it to this point. I'm just like, can't do the last movie.
We just never finish it.
No.
That would be depressing.
A real cliffhanger. Or is it? I don't know. Well, I mean, that's the episode for today, guys.
Okay.
Yeah, so I hope you enjoyed that Harry Potter trivia. I know that
I did.
That was the most interesting part for me. It wasn't the movie.
No, it wasn't the movie. Although I do have to say one shout out, and we've talked about this. Love how they did the animation to explain the Deathly Hallows story.
Oh, yeah.
That is gorgeous.
Oh, shout out to that. That was absolutely insane.
It's beautiful. It feels completely different from anything they'd ever done up to that point in the movies.
It's very magical. I like that it's in shadow, but then you do get some, like, 3D moments, and it just, like...
feels like a fairy tale.
Yeah, but, like, a creepy one.
Yeah.
So they didn't just, like, animate it and make it, like, beautiful. You know,
no.
Here's the Whomping Willow and Changing Times. And
no.
And you totally could have done that, and I'm sure it would have been fine, but, like, this was a standout moment for sure.
Yes. That part was awesome.
Yeah.
And the other couple things that were awesome, we've already shouted out. And pretty much other than that, snooze fest.
I love seeing Luna and Xenophilius dancing at the wedding, which, by the way, Luna, she choreographed that. She was the one who came up with it. She said, I wanted it to be like we're like wicking rack spurts off of our ears or something like that.
Ivana Lynch, again, proving why I love her.
She's so beautiful. Like, it's just... I guess she had a lot of say in how they decorated their home, and so she was very involved, which I think is great, and she really does embody Luna.
She
and
really
I mean,
is Luna.
And that's why she auditioned. She was like, I want to go in and be Luna. Like, I see myself in Luna.
This is me, yeah.
And it totally tracks. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I leave off on a high note. We love Luna.
Love the love goods.
We love the Deathly Hallows animation.
Yes. All right. Well, you guys can catch new episodes of the Basic Cinephile podcast every Thursday. You can find us on Instagram at the Basic Cinephile. We post movie and TV reviews, silly memes, and obviously lots of Harry Potter content.
Mm-hmm.
You can also find us on Facebook at the Basic Cinephile. We are on Twitter at the Basic Cineph 1. That is Cinephile without the ILE and the number 1. And we're on TikTok at the Basic Cinephile. And you can find us anywhere you get podcasts. Feel free to leave us a rating. Tell us how much you love us. And we'll see you back here next Thursday.
Yeah. Have a good week.
Bye.